I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome once again. We have a couple of hours of chock full of interesting stuff. Coming up in the next hour, you're going to hear conversations from London and the rebellions in London and what's going on there from the London perspective of the Afro-Caribbean community. We're going to hear from a Palestinian Israeli and a Jewish Israeli about what's going on in those major demonstrations taking place, 1 out of 6 people in the streets in Israel. What is that about? That comes up in the next hour. We're going to start our program off, though, with not a eulogy or a celebration, however you want to look at it. Spider-Man is dead, and Spider-Man is being reborn, and he's black. What? Yes. So, we are going to jump into that. Sitting here in the studio with me is one of my co-conspirators all the time, Dr. Lester Spence, professor of political science at Johns Hopkins University, and blogs at blacksmythe.com, and author of his new book called
Staring in the Darkness, The Limits of Hip-Hop and Black Politics.
There we go. And we have to do that show together. We haven't done that one yet.
Yeah.
Joining us by phone, Arturo Garcia, who's managing editor at racialissues.com, and his work has also appeared in Bleeding Cool and The Guardian, and wrote this piece on the new Spider-Man, and Charvanique Fortune, who is a blogger, animator, and owner of Charvanique Studios, organizer and anime convention T-Mode. So all welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for having us.
So let's just jump into this. I mean, so Peter Parker's dead, or maybe not.
One of them.
One of them, Arturo?
Yes, and that's one of the key distinctions to make here. In this case, the old cliche rings true. This is not your father's Spider-Man. This is the Spider-Man of what's called the Ultimate Universe, and a separate product line that Marvel introduced, in the past 10 years, to give a more contemporary take on core Marvel Comics characters. So the Peter Parker that died there, spoilers, was indeed a white teenager. But it is not the one from the original Marvel continuity.
It's a different one, but it's unique. He also died in an alternative universe, so he may come popping back at any moment. You don't think so, Lester? Go ahead, Arturo.
Well, it's always possible, but the Ultimate Universe, one of the tenets they held on to is that they're not resurrecting people. There was a crossover a year or two ago where they killed off a number of characters that are considered core to the Marvel Universe. The alternative version of Cyclops, Wolverine, Professor X, to name just a few, were all killed off. And they're being treated as, in this case, in this particular universe, dead is dead.
So, let's talk about how unique or not unique this is and what's going on with this. It's been interesting to follow some of the anger around this, but the new Spider-Man born is half Latino and half black.
Correct.
Right?
So, half African-American, and I believe the mother is Dominican.
Okay, so. Right. Right. So, and I wonder, what I've seen, Charvanique, then we'll go over to Lester, is that it's interesting some of the response people have been making, even to the point of saying this was a conspiracy done by Michelle Obama.
I'm not sure how much she's interested in comics, though. I find that really interesting because, as it was mentioned, this is just more like an alternate universe, a parallel universe. The, historical Peter Parker is still existing along the same timeline. So in this world, so many things can happen, and it's supposed to be on a more realistic scope. And one thing that I've noticed about Marvel is they tend to have their stories and their characters reflect more of current time. So I can see why they would go this route with a biracial character, considering even in our present times how we have a biracial president.
Lester?
Well, first is one technical thing. He's not, he's black. So they've been saying that he's been black, half black, half Latino. But if you go to the census, at least the 2000 American census categories, you could say black. There's black, white, and then there's black non-Latino, white non-Latino. The assumption being that you can be black, and then be Latino. So that's just really. So he's not, technically not biracial, but I just wanted to bring that up. But second, what the panelists have said are pretty much on the money, right? So I grew up reading Marvel Comics and DC Comics, and at various points in time, I was a Marvel kid or a DC kid. What the comic industry is dealing with are two simultaneous moves. So one move is that you've got, for the first time, really, well, maybe it starts about 5-6 years ago, but you've got an explosion of these superhero movies now where these comic book industries are able to make literally hundreds of millions of dollars off of their product line, right? So with DC, you're talking about Warner Brothers making that loot. With Marvel, you're talking about Disney making that loot because Disney owns Marvel. Right, so that's one move. But at the same time, the pool of comic book readers is shrinking. So you take the top comic book of when I was growing up, when I was kind of a young adult, like X-Men number one comes out in the mid-90s, and they sell like 1 million copies of that comic book. The top seller now may get 100,000. So you've got this explosion where you can make all types of money off the loot, you know, off the product line outside of comics. But comics, the pool of readers is shrinking. So Marvel has to think about, and DC, they both have to think about, how do we expand the readership pool, right? So you do that in a couple of different ways. One way is by making it such that you can come into a comic book shop cold, like Amazing Spiral here in Baltimore. You can come to a comic book shop cold and be able to pick up a comic book and read it without having to know years of stuff, right? That's the other thing. That's one thing. But the other thing they can do is expand the range of characters that could appeal to different demographics. So what we see in this particular move is all those things coming together, right? So you take 160 issues. I believe Bendis wrote 160 issues of Ultimate Spider-Man before this new character gets introduced. So technically, somebody can now come into the comic book store cold, read Ultimate, 161 or whatever number it is, and not have to know all that stuff about Peter Parker, right? And then on top of that, you can now be a black kid who wants to maybe read stuff about black superheroes and pick that comic book up and read it. And so they get new readerships in a couple of different ways.
So let me go to Arturo and Charvenic. So what for you is the significance of this? I mean, what is it? How does this change, or how is it changing, or how has Marvel changed the scene when it comes to our superheroes?
It's too soon to tell.
Go ahead, Arturo. Go ahead.
Sorry. It really is too soon to tell because we've only seen Miles Morales, the new Spider-Man, in the Ultimate Fallout number 4, which is it's part of a six-part storyline exploring the aftermath of the death of Parker. He won't get his official debut until September. So it's still too early to predict how this might go. The one thing is it's going to take patience, which is something that comic companies have seemingly grown short of over the past few years. Even beyond the recent explosion of comic book movies, not all of them are doing well. You know, Green Lantern didn't make that much money for DC, for example. And even characters like Deadpool and the Punisher, who have become cult favorites at various points, those characters were introduced over a decade prior to them becoming hot. The test is, if the new Ultimate Spider-Man doesn't set the world on fire, however they want to measure this, over the course of, let's say, the first year, is Marvel going to stick with the character for another 100-plus issues, like they did Peter Parker, or will they panic and actually introduce a coded resurrection under the guise of, you know, the return of the one true Spider-Man, or the return of the Icon, because readers demanded it, yada, yada, yada. The X factor here is digital sales. And digital sales, according to the industry, are a specific hope in terms of luring readers who don't want to go to a comic book shop, or don't want to go to, well, I can't get their borders anymore. But you know, but readers who outgrew or don't have time for the experience of going to the local shop, the idea that they can purchase the book digitally and they can reclaim that market, including markets relating to demographics that are traditionally underserved by the industry, people of color and women. So I don't think the change is there yet. This is an interesting approach, but it's too soon to gauge what this does in the long run.
Chevronique?
Well, I find it interesting as well. I think mostly because I think it will pull in new readers who would be interested in this new storyline. Of course, you're always going to have the fans who are going to be upset that, you know, Peter Parker, longtime hero, has been killed off. It seems like the racial aspect of the new character is a problem for some people to accept. I find this interesting because are they upset more that Peter Parker was killed off, or are they more upset that he was replaced with a non-white character? Because I was thinking if they chose someone who was still white but from a different background, if there would still be an uproar or a conspiracy theory about it, or if instead of being white American, maybe he was Australian, or even if they replaced with a woman, would there be as much of a problem associated with it if it was any of those other alternatives, especially since Peter Parker, as we know, is still existing simultaneously in other storylines.
Can I jump in on that?
Go ahead, Archer. I'm going to jump in with another thought about this. Go ahead.
Historically speaking, if the question is, would there be less of an uproar if the new Spider-Man was white? History says no. And ironically enough, the idea of the heroic mantle has been used most effectively by DC Comics over the past few years. We saw the mantle of the Flash go from Jay Garrick, white male, to Barry Allen, white male, to Wally West, white male. And in each case, the storytelling aspect was handled smoothly enough. But there wasn't that. There wasn't so much of an uproar. The Green Lantern mantle went from Alan Scott to Hal Jordan, and there you had John Stewart come in, but the Green Lantern was always part of a bigger core. There was never supposed to be just one Green Lantern. And in fact, when the news came out that the Green Lantern movie was based around Hal Jordan instead of John Stewart, who had been revived as a comic strip book character through the work of the late great Dwayne McDuffie in Justice League United cartoon, you had kids, in fact, wondering the opposite. So, hey, who's this guy? Our Green Lantern is John Stewart.
You know, real quick, I want to jump in with a couple of comments. First, I want to say it's really important for the listenership to note that I don't think any of this is possible. You know, you mentioned Dwayne McDuffie. I don't think any of this is possible without the creation of the Milestone Universe in the early 90s by Dwayne McDuffie. It was an attempt by Dwayne McDuffie and some other non-white comic book professionals to create a superhero universe that was more diverse. And that universe was incorporated recently into DC, and it came out kind of under DC's imprint. That's the first. It's really, really important, given that Dwayne passed away last February. It's really important to mention that. The second thing is that I complicate this a little bit in that there are a number of instances of comic book stories where people do not like aspects of the stories, because comic book geeks are really, really, we're really a special lot. Right, so
they're diehard fans.
Yeah, I mean, straight up diehard fans. Right, so he's absolutely right about John Stewart and the Green Lantern stuff and the Flash stuff. But I'd point to the Spider-Man clone issue when they came up with an argument that Spider-Man really wasn't Spider-Man. It was Peter Parker was Ben Reilly. Right, I'd come up with the Spider-Man wedding where for the longest time Peter Parker and Mary oh my God.
Mary Jane.
Mary Jane were married, and then all of a sudden they just dissolve it in a really, really hackneyed story plot, and people hated it. They absolutely hated it, and they went to the internet and tore Marvel guys a new one. So there are instances in which comic book geeks don't like the change in continuity that don't necessarily have anything to do with race but have to do with the story. But I would – now, with that said, I do think race plays a role here, but it's important to understand that to the extent race plays a role, it exaggerates stuff that already goes on amongst comic book geeks.
But let me ask three of you this. I mean, just to pick up on these last few points that you all made and about looking at where animation is going, the changing nature of America, and also to kind of just immediately talk about the focus on the race issue that was raised by – all of you, and you just what you just said, Lester. I mean, when you have some of the reaction to this, Fox News said that this represents a radical left turn, right? There was a blogger who said in Florida who said this is PC running amok. Glenn Beck, and I didn't say this earlier, but this is what I meant to say is Glenn Beck blamed Mrs. Obama for this, that she had her hand in this. So there are people who are like, because superheroes in America, they are, for young people, the mythic heroes that define social justice and good. They define what's right. They define the defiance against the system. They define protection against evil. So when that definition in a changing America changes, it does freak out some people. You know, some people...
Is it really... I question that a little bit because the comic-buying demo is skewing older. It's not necessarily kids anymore. It's 20-something. It's 30-something.
Yeah, that's right.
DC Comics talk about hacking story plots. Oh. But the resurrections of Hal Jordan and Barry Allen speak to an attempt to recapture people that are not kids.
Right. No, I hear you. And I guess because I'm probably older than all three of you, that when I say young people, give me lots of things. Because I grew up in the era when all you had was Wonder Woman, Superman, and Batman. So Marvel came on a tad later, at least properly. But so I hear what you're saying. Sharvanik, what's your take?
My take is that I don't know. Of course, some of it's political. You know, they're feeding into everything that's happening right now. But just in terms purely on story and what Marvel is attempting to do, I find it fascinating. When I first heard about it, at first I was a little leery about it just because, I don't know, I guess maybe I am more traditional in terms of characters and that they're killing off such an iconic character as Peter Parker. But then when I realized it's, like I said, it's like a parallel storyline, I think it's a great way to engage new people. Having his background be so different, they're creating such an interesting wealth of stories because he's coming from a different background. He'll have a different perspective on how to handle that role of being Spider-Man. One thing that I loved about Peter Parker to me in terms of comic book heroes is that he's such a regular guy. He wasn't like born with his abilities. He wasn't in his DNA to become a superhero. He was just going along his business, got bit by a radioactive spider, and then was suddenly thrust into the situation of what is he going to do with it. And, you know, radioactive spiders was real. That could happen to anyone. So he was, like, put into the situation to be better than himself, to do more to help, you know, his fellow citizens. And I can see this happening with this new character, putting him in this situation and how he will handle it.
Lester.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Going back to Dwayne McDuffie, so one of the first characters that Dwayne McDuffie was responsible for creating was a character named Static. And Static had almost the exact same background as Peter Parker, except that he was African-American, right? So he got caught in he was hit by radioactivity or like something called the Big Bang, and he was transformed. So when it's really interesting that Marvel is making a move with this new Ultimate Spider-Man that Milestone made almost 20 years ago. And it's going to be really interesting to see. She talked about the wealth of stories that you can now tell about this new Spider-Man and this new type of Spider-Man. It'd be really interesting to see how much they draw from a character like Static, who in many ways was a response to the original Spider-Man. Now, as far as the politics stuff, what I think about it, I don't necessarily – there are politics. But again, what we're talking about are markets, right? So just like Marvel wants to – part of it is the desire to tell different stories, but part of it is just about the attempt to get new markets. Everybody you're quoting, whether it's Rush Limbaugh or Glenn Beck, they're also interested in getting a market, right? So what they're doing is they're exaggerating these already existent tendencies – and then in order to draw listenership and readership, in order to make them excited, and in order to make them upset enough that they spend more time listening to them or buying their product.
I wonder how much the new world of animation that's coming that is kind of really taking hold in terms of what entertains people now, and it's going to be the growth industry, I think, in film and on the web. And you marry that with the changing demographic of America and with still the perception among many white kids, white people, period, that of being enamored with black, Latino, cool.
Oh, I didn't think about it. Yeah.
And how all this may transform
this
might symbolically begin a major transformation. Maybe not, maybe yes. What do you think?
Well, a couple things here. I think we should take a moment to give credit to Brian Michael Bendis, who introduced the character of Miles Morales. He's also responsible for the character of Luke Cage coming into greater prominence over the course of the past few years. And he's in fact written comics dealing with biracial adoption. And that's what it takes at the ground level. A committed creator, a committed editor to make these characters not only appear, stick and matter. As far as perception, I think beyond perception of the fans, we have to worry about the perceptions of the people in power, the people who are making the decisions to push X character or Y character. You know, Dwayne McDuffie did a great job with Static, but he needs to tell stories at San Diego Comic-Con about how DC would absolutely refuse to get behind marketing the character, even with as little as an action figure, because the perception in those corridors of power, relative to, as they may be, is that, you know, white kids would not buy a black action figure. White kids would not read a black comic book. So it's not just the fans. And part of the counter to Miles becoming Spider-Man is the question, well, why don't you create a new black superhero? And part of the reason companies are so reticent, I think, is because of the belief that white kids, the white audience will not accept them. And one thing I can speak in the positive is that the overall fan response to Miles is positive. It's, you know, the commenters that are being negative seem to be less now than they would have been, let's say, if this happened in 1986. So we can't lose sight of that. But I think it goes beyond content. We have to start questioning the structure that is making these decisions. And again, if Miles doesn't set the world on fire sales-wise by this time next year, will Marvel panic or will they keep building?
Sharvanik?
I think they're trying to take advantage of the momentum that Spider-Man already has. When the character Static Shock was created, he was new. He was unknown. They had more work to do to try to get him out there, to promote him, to get new fans to like him. But when you already take an existing character that already has a huge following, that is already known worldwide, and then you change him, that I think that will make it easier to try to get people to accept and welcome a new character as opposed to creating one that's completely new from scratch.
You know, there's an interesting political move. This is the first time I think, and I have to really think about this, but this is, might be the first time that you actually have the radical right, quote unquote, actually call for diversity, right? So I remember when I heard about the first move, the first thing they said is, why don't you create your own black superhero? I'm like, oh, wow, they're actually calling for the creation of, you know, that's actually kind of different, right? But to Arturo's point about sales and about the structure, he's absolutely right. So here's another way to complicate the dynamic I talked about earlier, where you have this shrinking market. The Ultimate Universe line has kind of been hamstrung because the energy they had when they were created, the original Marvel Universe has kind of appropriated, right? So the stories that used to only be possible, with the exception of the death thing, the stories that used to only be possible in Ultimate Universe, you know, they've been telling in the traditional Marvel Universe. So the Ultimate Universe is kind of flailing about. And one way to understand this move is as a move to really center and to create a better foundation for that Ultimate Universe line going forward. So the question isn't just whether this character will take hold a year down the line, but whether the Ultimate Universe takes hold down the line. And this goes to some of the critiques that some black comic book guys have been making, to say, wow, Marvel would have never thought about doing this in the original universe. You're doing this in the Ultimate Universe as kind of a way to shore it up, but you would never do this in the real
world. Well, I wonder what the three of you think then, if you just look a little bit ahead in the future here for a minute. When you think about where America's going, you think about the role that superheroes played in comic books for 60 years in America, where they came from, what they were born of. Some of it was born of World War II. Someone was born of the kind of great patriotic fervor of being a Boy Scout and taking care of those who are less fortunate than you, blah, 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 all that. And where this universe is going now in terms of where America is now and what people are looking for in their superheroes, because every culture has their superheroes, no matter what culture it is and how ancient or modern day it is. Our presence it is. So I wonder where you guys, the three of you, would speculate about where this is going. I mean, what it says about the change in American mindset, a culture, the viewpoint of people about what our needs are, where this is going to take us. Because clearly, it's always spoken to that, but now we're going to see it not in comic books. We're going to see it in animation. We're going to see it in graphic novels. We're going to see it in a different way, and how all that wraps itself up together. If I wasn't too confusing in that long-winded question. Go ahead, Lester. Arturo, go ahead, then we'll jump to Lester and Charvenay.
Okay. Well, if anything, what kids have been telling us over the past few years is that they're going to go to manga. They're going to go to Japanese comic books. You know, like I said before, the U.S. comic market as it stands is going after their father. And, you know, a year down the line, I don't see that changing. So, as long as the industry refuses to not just put up more characters of color, but actively pursue markets of color. And I mean advertising in our publications, you know, advertising on the shows that cater to us, going on shows like this one. If they just throw out a black comic book character for an audience older white audience that may not be as accepting, nothing's going to change.
But maybe add another twist to that, and then you can jump in here, Lester, along with Charvenique. But America is changing. I mean, the nature of who we are as a people is changing. The literal complexion of the nation is changing, and we're seeing like eruptions across the globe, of all kinds. So I wonder in terms of that, what this cultural phenomenon means in terms of this kind of new heroes in this new animation world. Go ahead.
So what I'll talk about is what it should mean versus and as well as what it will mean. So if you go back to 1939, right, the first superhero is Superman. Superman's
right.
Created by two Jewish creators.
Right.
Right. So Superman has all of the traits except the phenotype stuff, of a Jewish mythical figure, right? And in his first issues, he's fighting against corporate power, right? So he doesn't meet Lex Luthor until later in the run. His first issue, the first criminals he's dealing with are corrupt political officials and corrupt businessmen and big business. That's the first thing he's dealing with, right? But now, when corporations take over these characters, we see this move where now they're primarily dealing with quote-unquote supervillains. What I think should happen is that as well as increasing the range of character types, whether you're talking about by gender. Or by sexuality, the Batwoman is the new Batwoman is in a same sex relationship. She's a lesbian, or by race, right? That's one thing that we can all agree with. And then getting more comic book professionals who can speak to those experiences. But what I would like to see happen is I would like to see, or what should happen, are characters who don't just who use their superpowers, and I like to see characters being used in such a way to at least metaphorically speak about increased corporate power and decreased political power among the citizenry. That's unlikely, but I think that really speaks to what we need in this moment, as well as new aesthetics.
Charvanique, you take off on that.
I think that it's necessary and relevant for these companies to expand themselves to a more diverse group of people. Otherwise, they're just going to risk dying off because they will no longer be relevant to what's currently going on in the world. They have to adjust. They have to reinvent themselves to keep themselves interesting to the new population that keeps growing. Manga was mentioned. I mean, manga's been around for a long time, and it's becoming more and more popular in American culture, almost to the point to where I would even say at one point it was more popular, more in demand than American comics were. And that's when, again, going with the trend of what was happening, that's when you saw a lot of the comic book industry making variations that went along with the manga anime style. They even did that with Spider-Man. So I think in order for them to continue to remain relevant, to tap into the different demographics, it's necessary for them to make a move like this.
And do you think that this, and then finally, do you think that, that this whole kind of explosion over the new Spider-Man, the African-American character of Spider-Man, is this an opening that will create more bubbling from the bottom, where animation and these stories will bubble up on the web and be controlled by something other than the corporate world? Or is Disney, Marvel, and whoever owns whatever going to control it and limit what it could mean in the future? What do y'all think? Because we are facing a corporate giant everywhere we look in America and the world right now.
Yeah, once these characters are out there and you've got kids, so there's a whole generation of kids now who I think already knew that they could have superheroes who didn't necessarily look like them. And it's not just from comic books they're getting this, they're also getting this from video games and the like. As soon as you have a character like this, that character is going to contribute to an already bubbling cultural cauldron where you've got these kids who are using whether it's hip hop or Japanese monster movies like the stuff I grew up on to create characters outside of the big two, right? So we're going to see that bubble up, and some of it will appear in comic book form within the big two. Some of that might appear in something like maybe Image or Dark Horse, one of the other comic book producers. But some of it's just going to appear with high school kids disseminating stuff to their friends and among the internet, right? Particularly given the rise of like on-demand publishing has become cheaper now to produce this type of stuff than it ever did before.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that this is going to create an opening that is going to be up to the young kids listening, or even young adults, because you're right. I mean, you're talking about an age. People who read comics, you go into Amazing Spiral, and you find easily like people 40, 50 years old buying comic books, right? So it's going to take a moment. They're going to bubble up and create all types of stuff that we can't necessarily predict the result of.
Folks, I wish we had more time. We'll come back to this because I think this is really a fascinating subject, and it's one that's really important for us to wrestle with. I want to thank, first of all, Shravanik Fortune, blogger, animator, owner of Shravanik Studios, and organizer of the anime convention T-Mode, Arturo Garcia, managing editor at racialists.com. His work has also appeared in Bleeding Cool and The Guardian. And in studio with me, Dr. Lester Spence, professor of political science at Johns Hopkins University. We'll be here just next Monday. We'll be back Monday to talk about a conversation and discussion and debate on the nature of black nationalism in our culture today. So thank you all for being. It's been great to have you on.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
It's been a pleasure. We'll do this again. I want you all to stay tuned because when we come back from this brief break, we'll be heading in two different territories, going to London and Israel. Kwame Kwe Arma, who is the director of Center Stage and born and raised in Britain, will be talking about what's going on in London from the Afro-Caribbean perspective. And we'll be hearing also from Aziz Sara and Dimi Ryder, a Palestinian Israeli and a Jewish Israeli, talking about the events taking place on the ground all over Israel. So stay tuned for all that. You're listening to The Mark Steiner Show on WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Don't go away.
Spins a web, any size, catches thieves, just like flies. Look out, here comes the Spider-Man.